the volume.
Oral Sessions is brought to you by FanDuel. It's never been easier to play fantasy on FanDuel. Whether you love basketball, golf, soccer, or any other fantasy sport, there's a contest for every fan. FanDuel, more ways to win. Hey guys, welcome to Oral Sessions. It's me. Guys, I miss you. Taking a brief little small hiatus while we get our shit together in the middle of moving and all of these crazy fun things, but it's all good, baby, baby, as they say. We are doing some best ofs here for Oral Sessions. So this episode with the one, the only former UFC heavyweight champion, the man behind all things blood sport, one of the most dangerous men in the freaking planet, Josh Barnett. He was my first interview that I ever did for Oral Sessions. First of all, I mean, thank you, Josh, for being my guinea pig. I mean, you get a guest like Josh Barnett right off the bat. Like, I feel like that really set the wheels in motion for what this show was meant to be and what we were going to be accomplishing and just the cool conversations that I wanted to have. Josh is such a fascinating dude. I would actually love to have him back on again to pick his brain now that, this is a bit more of a well-oiled machine at this point. Literally. Okay, so here's the funny thing with this interview is that I had just found out that I was pregnant. And I traveled to Indianapolis with John because he was doing blood sport. I didn't know what was going on, but I was like, I'm going to like start trying to do the show, but I'm pregnant and I don't know what to do. My emotions, my hormones, everything's all over the place. And I literally just did this interview with Josh in our hotel room, like knee to knee on my laptop. I had no microphones. I had nothing. I had like Emilio wasn't even on board yet. I had no producer. I had no volume behind me. This was literally a one woman production of just like, I want to do a show and I want to have these cool conversations and I don't know where to start. So this is where I started. I started with Josh Barnett and it's just so cool to see where the show has gone and the fact that we've been doing this for a year and you guys have been so cool for supporting the show and supporting me and all these other endeavors that I've been able to do. I really appreciate you guys listening and I appreciate all my guests that take the time to come on and tell their story and be open and honest and just having cool conversations with really fucking cool people. Just a big thank you to The Volume, to everyone at The Volume, all people involved, especially Colin Cowherd for bringing me on so early on to this venture for him and knowing how important The Volume is for him. So the fact that he was willing to invest in me and my show to help make this whole project work is so damn cool. So thank you guys. Let's get into it. Here is my very first interview I ever did for Oral Sessions with Josh Barnett. Oh my gosh, this is my very first episode.
Oh, well, this will be a good way to start it.
It's an interesting way to start it because I don't have a microphone. Mm. We're in a hotel room. Mm-hmm. And this is my first thing I've done since I've left WWE, actually.
Okay.
So we'll see how the fuck it goes. Welcome to the Oral Sessions. Does that sound like too much of a blowjob thing?
It does have a bit of a job-esque quality to it.
But do you think people will get over that? Will they understand that it's just about having a conversation?
Ooh,
I'm a little hung up
on
it.
Well, you know, you're really expecting a lot from the general public.
Okay.
And the internet at large, yeah. Too.
Maybe the name will change. Maybe it'll stay this way. I don't know. Guys, I've got Josh Barnett here with me. And this is a big weekend. We're here doing Bloodsport. Mm-hmm. Finally.
Finally.
You're not on the show tonight.
No, that's the thing. It's like, okay, now here, finally. And then, yeah, I'm not competing in it because I'm going to Poland to do a bare knuckle fight with elbows.
Which is fucking insane. And we're going to talk about that in a mere moment. But what is it like for you being completely on just the production side, running the show together, putting the card together? Are you very meticulous about every little detail with that?
I am. And it's slightly less pressure because I always feel pressure to go out there and perform also. Just because I just always want to exceed whatever anybody's expectations are, but mainly my own, like my own ability to go out and do what I need to do in the ring. And so I always feel the weight of stepping out there and putting the best that I can possibly deliver on the line and realizing also that it's not all about me. I'm not by myself. I'm in there competing against somebody else. And, you know, they have a big effect on how that works out, too. But I basically walk around thinking that I must have forgotten something the whole time. It's always just like, okay, what'd you forget? There's got to be something that you haven't done. You know, and I just,
especially during like this day and age when it's like COVID shit's happening, shows are run so differently of how people are getting into town, what kind of testing is being done, where people are going. Like, is that something that was a big factor for you guys putting the show together?
Yeah, to a degree, but you know, thankfully I have a good partner. So, Brett handled a good portion of that, but even still, like, so I had Dickinson and Harry and myself all training together and Hammer. So we all got tested just to make sure. And easy enough, we're all negative, thankfully. And it's just another detail that needs to be taken care of. Thankfully, it's not in general that hard. Like the first time I ever got tested was in, I think it was March or early April. And there was literally no resources as to where to go. I mean, they all talked up a big game about, oh, you know, hit up the LA County of this.
And there's like the drive-through things that are like hour-long waits.
Yeah, well, at least that existed when I first got tested. Every resource that they kept hammering home, oh, contact these people. All they would tell you is hit up your provider, hit up your general doctor and schedule an appointment.
Who has a general doctor? Yeah. I don't.
And so I managed to find an ER that had a setup. By the way, funny enough, when I went there, hardly anybody knew what the hell was going on as far as like no one was there for COVID.
That was
like,
early,
there was four of us. That was it. I saw four people the whole time.
Did you go because you thought you had it or you just wanted to be tested?
Yes, because I was at a concert and someone came down with it.
Yeah.
And then it, as it turned out, a bunch of none of us got it.
Thank God.
Yeah, it was supposed to be a four-day turnaround. And then a week goes by, a week and a half.
Yeah.
I'm like, what the – hey. So I call them. Then I got to call medical records and I got to go. They became such a pain in the ass. I was just like, wow, you know, this is the best we can do here.
I know. It's messy. It all sucks. John, my husband, is here as well. He's also in the room. You're finally performing on Bloodsport. This has been eluding you for some time at this point.
I'm pretty stoked. This has been like over a year in the making. I've been waiting to do the show. Because I saw the first one. I was there live. I was all stoked. I was like, this is what pro wrestling is supposed to be.
Was that your first one? That was your first Bloodsport?
That was my first Bloodsport show. Yeah. And in fact, I mean, I remember Brett going, oh, hey, guys from New York want to show up. I'm like, get them whatever seats they want, man. They want to be, especially when Regal goes, hey, I want to come down. Yeah. And I've known him for some time. Like, well, whatever you need, dude.
Yeah.
Just tell me. Well, if you want to bring anyone, you bring them. It's no big deal. Like, I'm glad to have people there.
I remember how stoked he was in the hotel room, just like so excited to go. He was going down with William Regal. He knew he had to kind of like hide in the audience because generally at the time in WWE it was like kind of frowned upon to show up at other shows, right? So you had to kind of like sneak your way in there, right?
Yeah, I was just laying low. I was just counting down the days to being a free man at that point. So that was the first time I've been to an indie show in like 8 years.
Yeah. But now this
is being in that environment and that crowd was so great and it was no bullshit, no angles, no promos, just fighting and just the athletes. And I was like, fucking, this is where I belong. Like,
seeing how pumped you get for that. And we were watching some of the shows over this weekend as well. But you don't like any of the fluffy stuff. Are you into any of like the fluffy side of wrestling? Because I fucking love that shit.
No, it's not for me. And that's cool. If there's a market for it, they'll make it.
Sure.
And there's a lot of people that are able to put together a career out of this kind of stuff. And I'll be honest, man, I've definitely seen stuff where it's comedy that I think has been brilliant and hilarious and great. But I guess the way I see it is I have a delineation. So there's wrestling and then there's theater, basically. Sure. It's like, so if you're doing comedy matches and goofy stuff and like weird over the top gimmicks, I'm like, yeah, it's a great event to be at, but I don't call it wrestling.
Right.
Like that's not wrestling to me.
It's a totally different
thing. But it could still be awesome and I could still have a great time. I cleanly separate my wrestling from my, you know, like I don't know, wrestling type event. I don't know. There's so much fluffy kind of interesting irony kind of. So to have something that is absolutely not that, something that is dead serious and really stripped down and raw. I also think, I mean, one, it stands out. It becomes something that is a completely unique. Mm-hmm. And I think also what makes it even more unique is when people try to steal the gimmick, bite it, rip it off.
Where have we seen that? What are you talking about?
A few places. Although it's, you know, the one major one isn't really the first either.
Yeah.
Not at all. I understand why they might want to do it. It only helps us at the end of the day. But I've seen other organizations already try to rip the whole idea off. And it's fine. But what it does show is that people think that it's, oh, well, I'll just go out there and do MMA moves in a match. No, that's not it. oh, I'll just take the ropes down. No, that's not it. Like, mm-hmm. you can try and look like the packaging all you want, but you will not be the product. It is not that way. And even then, I think that we are even on an evolution with what we're doing, because it's been so long since wrestlers were trained to wrestle this way anymore, mm-hmm. for people to put together shows, anything like this. Like, this is so of a past that has been neglected, that doesn't exist. So a lot of this is ground up. And that's something people don't think realize.
Yeah, I mean, you were saying that watching it last night, but just how much you gravitate towards this being the up and up of this maybe being what is going to essentially be the next big thing within the pro wrestling world.
It's kind of like the hot, trendy thing on the indies right now over the last year or so, is to copy this blood sport concept. And I've seen some bad imitations, but this is the original. So, and I can tell, I can kind of feel the buzz. This is the show of the weekend of great shows with the most buzz.
I can feel the buzz off of you. I mean, I know when I can tell that you're very excited and invested in something that's happening tonight. So you've got Chris Dickinson tonight. When do we get you two together again? Well, is that going to happen?
There's a plan for very early next year.
Oh,
to make the reality come true at this point. You know, maybe strange to have potential opponents sitting in the same room, but but that's also something that goes with the old school quality of fighting and pro wrestling. And that is, okay, everybody knows what our job is. Everybody is here and they know what's expected. And so it's not a big deal,
you know,
because we all show up to the ring ready to go.
You know, so how concerned should I be for John tonight?
I think you should be concerned
for him. Because I see him do some fucking horrific shit.
But you got to be concerned for both, because someone that gets in the ring with another of the highest level, it just raises you up to it. These are two guys that have been training for this moment, training to unleash themselves in this ring in a place where you will not find the opportunity in the rest of the wrestling world. And this is some of the difficulty of doing events like this, is when you strip away all the excess BS, all you're left with is the wrestler. And their ability to be out there in their element and create.
Okay, so on to your next venture. So October 23rd, you've got a bare knuckle fight in Poland. Uh-huh. What the fuck? Why?
Life's an adventure. This is a return to what it was like starting off in MMA for me when it was called No Holds Barred.
Yeah.
There were very few places to go and actually compete. And a lot of stuff was just made up on the fly. You know, between rules and locations and what have you, and whether or not you can even get paid for it.
Yeah.
That's how we started. With the pandemic shutting everything down and places to go and compete being so limited, except for, you know, the UFC, which has been doing a great job of keeping their people busy, which is fantastic. But most of the other organizations were shut down by when I was working on getting this booking. And so I was reaching out around the world to my contacts going, okay, what place is available? Where can we fight? I just want to get in the ring. That's what's necessary.
Is this like a feeling? I mean, just wanting to fight, or just like you've got some extra energy that you need to expel somewhere
just,
right
just
now?
Just want to fight. I just want to fight. I want to get in that ring and light somebody up this year. That's what has to happen. And they said, well, okay, not MMA, but what about bare knuckle boxing with elbows and dirty boxing, clinching?
Jesus.
And I'm all, yeah, fine. Sounds great to me. Sounds awesome.
How do you prepare for something like that? From what you're doing this weekend with Bloodsport, I mean, you're their producer side, but now, mere days later, you've got to switch gears to start preparing for your fight.
I've been training the entire time. I've had a training camp. I've been boxing, working with my boxing coach, Jamal. Pretty much all the same kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And just making sure that your cardio is good, your conditioning is good, and just lining that mentality up. And I'll have enough time when I'm over in Poland to just sit there and start stripping away all the layers of everyday modern life and get to that point where I don't care about anything else in the world anymore.
Some real man shit.
When I saw the promo for that bare knuckle fight, the way I took it was, you're out of challenges. But it just seemed like, well, what challenges are left in combat sports for me? Let's go bare knuckle with elbows against this gnarly dude.
Well, I've never done any bare knuckle boxing, but back early on in my career when we were doing unsanctioned fights and stuff like that, we used to fight bare knuckle and what have you. This is a big, fully produced event. This is some professional level stuff, and it's stand-up only. So it's like living a real-life Street Fighter 2, you know, traveling around the world, just fighting people, finding challenges. Given that, this might be you might be looking at my face the last that it looks like this. You just never know.
Come on, man.
That bare knuckle boxing that's like the BKFC and all that.
Yeah.
Like,
No, Chris Lieben
and all that. Dudes are getting cut the fuck up.
Yeah, you will get cut for sure.
So this brings me into your personal life. Because I feel like you are a hell of a bachelor.
Yeah.
You're like a prime get. What is your dating life like?
It's pretty tame. Really.
Okay.
And I've never really been much of a person to live a very flamboyant romantic life in any sense.
Okay.
I can say that I've been lucky enough to meet people in my life that, whether or not it ever even went anywhere, are still friends of mine, still important components to things that I do. And I'm also just, I think I'm a pretty difficult person. I'm not possessive. I'm not jealous. I'm not so utterly particular that you can't be around me, but I'm a particular individual, and folks might find it hard to.
Do you have a lot of quirks?
No, I don't think they're really quirks. I just don't do things like the normal person. I'm the kind of person that will defend his woman's honor, or
hell yeah, know,
or it's like, okay, if things need to be taken care of, I don't pick up an app or use a service call or something. I do it myself.
Yeah.
I'm very particular about understanding what I do, what ramifications they can have, and then trying to see ahead. And so, you know, I might sit there and go, you know, okay, well, you didn't think this thing through, did you?
Yeah, yeah.
But I'm also an incredibly busy and ambitious person.
Yeah.
And so anybody that wants to be in my life has to realize that, oh, yeah, I might get a call for one of my fighters. I'm going to be in Dubai in 3 weeks.
Yeah.
So, hey, you got a passport? You ready to go? Can you work from home?
Sounds like a great adventure.
Or I'm going to go to Poland and go fight some fully tattooed head-to-toe madman, bare knuckle with elbows, and see who comes out looking uglier. Or I'm going to do this, or we're going to travel here, or, oh, I got to shoot a movie for a month and a half in Thailand. And
yeah.
You got to be okay with me being out and about and just having confidence in yourself to know that if we're on the same team, if we're in this together, then that's it. Like, nothing changes for me. That's all I need to know. But for some folks, it can be hard. I want somebody that is confident in what they're doing and who they are, and is also willing to take on the responsibility of not only the growth of the relationship as they get into it, because we're both responsible for that. You know, it is the culmination of both of our efforts, but it's also someone that is willing to continue to do the work on themselves. It's like, you don't get into this relationship and then, okay, boom.
And then out of everything.
Yes. No. Like, we're still on a journey together. Yeah. You still have things that you're going to have to solve, and me as well.
Start a podcast, babe.
No,
get it going.
No. I had one for a minute with Fox, but 6 episodes in, they started reneging on a bunch of their responsibilities and doing things poorly. So I just was like, I'm done.
Never mind.
I'm done. And
I
realized that a podcast is a great thing, but at least for me, it's going to take a lot of time for any of the things that I might want to talk about, the research to be done, to track down the folks and all that. And if I'm going to commit that kind of time to anything like that, at least the way I would approach it, then it's got to be something that's
got to be full on.
Yeah. And most of the time also, I've had talks with some of the larger podcasting companies, and they'll always veer back towards, oh, so what about an MMA podcast?
Of course.
Like, no.
Yeah.
I don't want to watch that much MMA. I don't want that much MMA in my life. It's just, I mean, I enjoy it, but I don't want to do that. It's not something that interests me. I want to talk about other things.
What other things would you do? What are some of your other interests or things that you would focus on?
That's a good question.
Because John's he watches so much wrestling, MMA, like all the time. What are some of the other things that you like to have into? Do you like read a lot?
Yeah, I read. I listen to lectures and philosophy. And,
I knew it.
And even, you know, things in regards to political science and history. So I would probably veer more that direction, or maybe be more like a Rogan type thing. Or like an Anthony Bourdain, where you just follow the things that you're interested in and then figure out a way to translate it for the audience at home.
Make this Thanksgiving a refer a friendsgiving with FanDuel. Give and get $100 in site credit when you invite friends to join America's number one sportsbook. This offer ends Thanksgiving Day, so don't miss FanDuel's biggest refer a friend offer ever. Share your exclusive referral link right from the sportsbook app. Once your friend places any bet of $10 or more, you'll both get a $100 bonus. You can bet your bonus any way that you'd like. You can bet on over 17 plus sports. Take a chance on same game parlay bet. Jump into the action with live betting or bet with big promotions like odds boosts. And when you win, FanDuel is going to pay you in as little as 2 hours. That's nothing. So FanDuel's refer a friend comes just in time for a full day of Thanksgiving NFL football. So get on, make your money. Are you new to FanDuel Sportsbook? Enter promo code Renee while signing up and you'll also get 30-1 odds on any team to win on Thanksgiving Day. Share more than stuffing this Thanksgiving. Head over to FanDuel Sports app and invite friends today. Disclaimer, 21 plus, present in Arizona, Colorado, Connecticut, Indiana, Michigan, New Jersey, Tennessee, Virginia, or West Virginia. Referred players must wager $10 within 20 days after signing up. Limit to 10 referrals. Site credit is non-withdrawable and expires after 10 days. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP or text NEXTSTEP to 53342 in Arizona. 1-888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org/chat for Connecticut. 1-800-GAMBLER or visit fanduel.com/RG for Colorado, Indiana, New Jersey, and Virginia. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. TN Redline, 1-800-889-9789 in Tennessee, or visit www.1800gambler.net for West Virginia.
So you are also into many other weapons, right?
Yeah.
Because I was watching some videos of you doing what, like some axe throwing. Yep. Do you like collect different weapons? Swords and
yes,
shit?
Yes, I have. Well, I'm sponsored by Cold Steel Knives.
Okay.
And they make swords and axes. And
oh, I think I heard you talking about that on Rogan's podcast. Yeah.
Cold Steel rules, man.
Yeah, Cold Steel.
Me and Samoa Joe send each other gifts back and forth of just random weapons.
It's insane.
He sent me a blowgun the other day. It's sick as fuck.
Oh, yeah.
Right there in the yard.
Joe has sent a blowgun,
Weird
what do you call it again,
hammer dart thrower thing that I took out the tree with,
and the whip thing.
Oh, I'm big into the shambok.
Shambok.
You know, one of the main dudes that works with Cold Steel, Ron Balicki, has a whole video on how to fight and train with the shambok.
Oh, you got to get that. You got to watch that, because he gets me to, he's like, if I'm running to like the grocery store, grab me a watermelon, get me like something that he can just like smash.
Isn't
open
it weird how
it.
Much force that thing can generate?
What we're talking about, it's a South African snake whip. It's like a big rubber whip. It looks like a fucking giant sex toy. You wouldn't think
they're all over our house. People must be freaked out by them.
It creates so much force that it's like becomes like a laser beam. First time I ever tried to break a watermelon with it, I was like, okay, let's see how this goes. Fucking whip that bitch. Zoom! Cut through that thing like a fucking laser.
That's insane.
Yeah. Well, and Cold Steel has assegai spears. And the story behind that even is, so Lynn Thompson, the owner, head guy of Cold Steel, he's also a big time hunter, but he often hunts with spears and native weapons and things like that.
Damn. And do you do that?
I do not, but he wants to teach me to do it. I've thrown the boar spear, I've thrown a few others, but I don't have the skill like Lynn does. But,
do you hunt at all?
I have when I was younger, but it's been a long time.
Yeah.
I just don't have the time, but I love wild game. So I enjoy hunting, but also I enjoy being in the woods and in the wilderness. And I know it seems kind of weird, but hunting made me like animals that much more, like made me love being in the woods, made me love being a part of all that and really respect what the earth and the wilderness is and the things within it.
Yeah.
You know, and also to understand the brutality of real life.
Oh, my God.
Of the animal kingdom, of the universe itself.
John's dad's a big hunter. He's always trying to push it. He loves it.
My dad's like a super redneck. He's very different from me.
But the food is incredible, right? Like getting fresh elk is just unreal.
It's very good.
But so Lynn was in Africa and he saw these assegai tribesmen throwing spears, like doing these contests with each other. And Lynn's like, well, hey, I would love to buy one of those spears from you. And they're like, yeah, no, you can't. You can't have it. He's like, well, how could I earn one of these from you? And they're like, well, if you can beat us in spear throwing.
Oh, okay.
And so Lynn picks up and Lynn did throw spears and he did well enough. And they're like, oh, okay. We did not expect that. All right, then. So you know what? No, here, just have them.
Damn.
He's got real assegai spears in his office that he used to pattern to make the ones that he now sells. And there are people that go spear hunting for game based on his designs. But, you know, Cold Steel, they do the insane pressure testing and stress testing they do on their blades is
second to none. And when other competitors will come out and say, oh, we got the strongest locks, we got this on our, and they'll go, okay. And they put them all up against their cold steel stuff and watch it. Cold steel beats them every time.
What do you use these knives for?
Mainly so that I can make sure that there are no boxes safe anywhere that might attack me.
Please come to my house and take care of that.
But you just having a pocket knife is always a great tool. My dad carried a knife with him everywhere he went. You know, his grandfather.
Is this one of theirs?
Yeah, this is a cold steel Swift. So it's got a spring assist opening. And
how do you get through TSA with this guy? You got to check it?
Check it, yeah.
Dang.
But I've trained Filipino martial arts for sticks and knives and things like that in terms of it as a weapon. But mainly, it's just you should always have a knife. Even the backside of the blade has some grinding on it to give it a little bit of an angle here. So you could use this as a screwdriver, possibly. You can use this to wedge things open, what have you. I mean, it's a knife is just a general tool of life.
Do you sharpen your own knives?
I do, but it's so much easier to just give them to Cold Steel.
Get someone else to do it.
Yeah. But so I throw axes, knives. I can fight with knives and sticks. I have been shooting since I was a very young kid.
Yeah.
And I still do shooting sports when I can. And it also stems from the idea that if I own a tool, I need to know how to use it.
You know,
there's no point in owning anything if I have no clue how to make use of it.
Like, sure.
It then just becomes a lump of steel.
Well, that we had a gun at our house for a moment, and I'm from Canada. My ass does not like guns.
Okay.
And it very much.
What about the rest of you?
The rest of me is Canada-ish.
Yeah.
But yeah, I was
a lot of guns in Canada, by the way. That's a myth that Canada doesn't have guns.
There is. I mean, I'm sure at some point
I'd see.
No, I love BC, but I'm from Toronto.
Toronto, okay. Okay, yeah. Well, see, if you're in Vancouver, that's one thing, but then there's the whole surrounding area.
Of course.
That's all hunting, fishing, game.
Yeah, you can, like, Alberta and all that. Like, my uncle's big into all that stuff. But he brought one home, and it was like he fucking opened a box of snakes in the garage. Like, scared the shit out of me.
They really jumped, like, 5 feet back.
Well, because he kept saying, he was like, we should get a gun. We should get a gun. I'm like, I just don't know that we need a gun. And as much as his dad.
You should just start going shooting.
So we went to, and that scared me even more.
Okay.
I don't think I'm equipped for it, but I don't know that John's necessarily equipped for it either.
It doesn't really, like, interest me that much. Really.
But you scared me putting it together, and, like, it freaked me out.
I would say get a nice little .22. And go out somewhere and have empty pop cans and water bottles.
I could
and
do
fun
that.
Things like that and just pick, and just, like, shoot little things down and have a good time.
I almost think it was going into a shooting range and having so many guns around. People are firing them off that I'm like,
overload.
Oh, my God.
It's sensory overload if you're not comfortable with that environment. Plus, I don't really like going and shooting in indoor shooting ranges also because –
what if someone's crazy?
Yeah, it's fun for like 5 minutes and then...
There's always that.
Very minimal screening in there.
Yeah, well, I mean, like, they'll generally have a policy where you can't go in by yourself unless you're a member, you know, or you can't rent any... If you bring your own firearm, that's one thing, but if you want to rent one, you have to have someone with you. Otherwise, to try and minimize people that want to try and use a gun range as a suicide
option. Oh, God!
Yeah.
God!
I like trap shooting when I was a kid.
Trap shooting's fun.
Trap shooting's fun.
What's Tons that? Fun. What is trap shooting?
Like duck hunt where they throw the frisbee.
Oh.
Yeah, that's a lot more fun.
Okay.
So it's trap and skeet. You know. Yeah, skeet.
Is the clay thing?
Skeet, they just shoot the clays out into the air and you have a shotgun and you pop them out of the sky. Trap, they'll also try to mimic other animals.
Okay.
So they'll roll it across the ground.
Oh,
they'll shoot it low.
That sounds fun.
And it's a game, right? You're trying to pick off all the targets as they go.
Okay.
And
that
so,
sounds more fun.
You know, but the thing about shooting, I think that even though it seems like a bag of snakes to you, there's something correct in your approach and in your
instinct for it?
Well, your trepidation.
Okay.
Because people should treat guns as if they're always loaded and that you know, you never point it at anything you're unwilling to destroy. And even having a knife or something like that, always, always consider this thing sharp. It could go all the way into my tendons. It could, you know, God forbid, get into an altercation with a blade. How dangerous, like having respect for things is the way it should be. And if more people consider the items all the way up to driving their cars, if they considered their cars 4,000-pound death machines that can murder people and ruin lives.
Yeah.
Then perhaps they'd be better drivers too.
That's a great point.
I assume everybody on the road is an idiot.
You're a very careful driver.
Because everybody's texting this 17-year-old girl playing on her Snapchat and hits me and kills me. Like, I assume everybody is not paying attention, so I pay extra attention.
Terrible way to die.
So John's such like a badass, kind of scary dude. He freaks people out. But he's a – no, but you are. I mean, you freak people out just in general. And like, you know.
We have that brow ridge thing going on.
Is that what – is it? Is that what
it is? Deep sunk eyes. Yeah. Like, look at this fucking shark over here. He's what's he going to bite?
This guy's problem. Yeah. But he's like the sweetest, nicest guy. I feel like you fall under that category where you're just actually like a very nice, gentle guy.
If you – you know, people will often, I've got stories where I've literally intimidated people without doing anything.
Right.
And with no intention. Like I was sitting at a small little bar in
a
venue and a leather jacket with death metal pins and stuff. But
yeah.
I was just sitting at this bar. There was only four seats at the bar and they were all covered. And I was sitting in one of them and I'm watching this band in this small place. And I kept seeing people like walk up to the bar and walk away, walk up and walk away, walk up and walk away. And I finally look over and I see this guy standing there and it looks like he wants to come up and get a drink, but he's kind of fidgety. And I'm like, what the hell? So I just look over at him and he makes eye contact with me, kind of slinks his head and throws up a high with his hand and then turns and walks away. And I'm going, oh shit. People have been wanting to come up and order a drink, but they see me sitting here. And
was it just that he recognized you, though? Like, was he like a big MMA fan?
No, I never expect that anybody knows who I am when they see me. He just saw someone. And even if that was the case, you know, just ask.
Right.
Like, I would have moved aside so you could have got a drink. And I just thought like, oh, Jesus, man, I'm not here to harsh anybody's vibe or be a dick about anything.
Yeah.
And really, the toughest people I've ever known, they don't have to externally tell the world they're tough or anything like that. There's no need for any of it. It's just try to be as respectful and open and easygoing as possible until you the time that you don't.
Right.
and somebody has to make that be the case. They have to be overly difficult, unwilling to communicate, unwilling to compromise in any way. And really trying to force their perspective or their wishes or wants upon the situation.
Yeah.
Like, well, they'll put you in a scenario where it's a choice, like an either or. Like, oh, okay. Well, if that's...
You're not going to like this.
Generally, part of the things that will make me the angriest about that, too, is this never had to happen. This is so stupid.
Mm-hmm.
Why did you make this? You know?
Why did you put me in this position?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I hate people like that.
Yeah,
yeah,
because
you avoid that at all.
It's just so dumb.
Too.
I mean, you just want to leave it. You just want to be like, oh, come on, man. Like, this is the dumbest thing in the whole world.
The toughest dudes in the world are the chillest dudes in the world.
Always,
Like yourself, Chuck Liddell.
Chuck never wants to get into a fight. Okay. No. Ever. He's very soft spoken. He's just like, hey, man, it's.
He was telling us about a verbal altercation at his daughter's soccer game or something. Just rooting for his kid and like some shit went down. I don't know.
Oh, yeah. Kids,
that might be a different story.
Kids sports, man. That's one where the.
Yeah.
What was that story? You'd have to get him
over. I'd have to get him to tell the story. I don't remember it clear enough, but.
Oh, yeah. You watch parents like get sideways just when their kid, like their 4-year-old is playing T-ball or something.
Yeah,
you're like, really, dude?
Really? Chill the fuck out. So you're in LA. What made you move to LA?
Work.
Just for work, yeah.
Well, and when I moved down to the LA area in 2000, well, actually, I started training down there in 2004 and fully moved there in 2006. And this happens actually quite a lot with MMA, where you'll have a cycle where there's a bunch of guys coming through and everybody's all about it. And then all of a sudden, they just kind of all dissipate and disappear. And then you're the last guy left around.
Yeah.
And things were just really kind of petering out up in Seattle, and the support group wasn't there. And I'm like, well, I need training partners. I need oversight. I really need full-time everything. I'm in Pride and I'm doing this. So I started going down and training with Eric Paulson. But then I was finding out that being in LA, more people were aware of what MMA was and willing to get in bed with it. So being in LA, I found that there was all this infrastructure for a professional MMA fighter. Mm-hmm. And that made a big difference. And even back then, people would often think of Vegas as the mecca of US MMA, but the reality was, no, it was Southern California. But then also, so much business is in LA, right? Everything having to do with entertainment. And let's get it straight. Whether you're doing MMA, wrestling, what have you, you're working in the entertainment industry. by being in LA, it keeps me close to all the other opportunities like movies and
those are the things that you want to dabble into more.
You know what? Just as much as I find that traveling the world and fighting whoever I can find is an adventure, it's an adventure to see what other opportunities can arise from just being open to new experiences,
100%.
Like doing movies, working on television, producing professional wrestling, and who knows what other things could open up and whether or not you can really make something of it. But you won't know until you dare.
It's such a fun process doing that. And I'm kind of going through that myself of just leaving WWE. I'm like, fuck it. I'm just going to leave and see what else comes up and, you know, kind of bet on myself and figure out the rest of the shit later. It's a fun process to kind of throw yourself out there and
see exactly what's going to happen. And you got to be unafraid to fail.
Yeah, you can't assume everything's going to be a smash hit. Correct. Or, you know, learn and grow as you're going.
And it's just also, look at all the people that may have crossed that Rubicon before you. What did they do? Or even look at how did WWE do things? How do they run their production on their shows? How did they buy the territories? How did they, you know, there's a million things that happen in WWE that you can go, okay, this is the process they did for that. This is why they have this department. This is why, and you can understand the first principles of what they're doing to create their product. Mm-hmm. And then you can learn from that and say like, well, I think it'd be better if you did it this way. So I'm going to try it like this, or I would rather it have this look or this feel.
Yeah.
And so I can hire the same kind of folks, but then tweak it to work in the way that I think is best. And so there's so many examples out there to help a person get some framework towards creating what it is that they want to do.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a really fun process to be a part of. Okay. So final thing to talk to you about here.
Mm-hmm.
The last time we saw you was when we were in Honolulu. What happened?
I don't know, but boy, was that miserable. Oh God.
That was crazy.
We had such a great dinner.
Yeah.
Everything was fantastic. This is my last meal and you know, it's time to go. I wake up at 3 o'clock in the morning. And I got the shivers and the sweats and I'm going, this isn't good.
Oh, God.
Is not good. And it only got worse. At 6 a.m., I barely slept. I called everyone I could call. I go, I need to see a doctor immediately. And they rushed me in to see a guy. They plumbed me full of 2 bags of IVs and vitamins and everything. Shot me full of Toradol and different meds. And it wasn't making much of a difference at all. And they finally even get me to the arena. And I'm just with my hoodie on and in my sweats, crumpled on the floor, shivering. You know, just
oh
like,
my God.
It was just
like, was it something you ate? You think? Because we all kind of shared food that night.
Yeah, no, I don't think so because it hung around for a little bit, right? Mm. The severity lessened. And I think a good reason why the severity dropped as it did was because of getting injected full of all these IVs and all this kind of stuff. But I had a fever. I was just fucked up.
Fuck.
So it's just like a flu.
Don't know.
Just got your ass. Because what was crazy, I mean, obviously we didn't know, but we're sitting ringside because he was supposed to go in and do a spot.
Yes. 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 No, not only did I not get a chance to go out there and go to war with Ronnie Marks. Sorry, dude. We were going to put something together and it all fucking went to shit. It was a massively miserable moment. It really was.
Oh, man. I mean,
well, you know, he's
terrible time. Yeah. Because Eric came out. He's like, yeah, Josh isn't fighting. He's like, doctor won't clear him. He's all fucked up. 8 hours ago, he's perfectly fine.
We were all
fine.
Together. Everything's fine.
What the fuck happened?
Because we sat down. He's like, so I'm just going to run in here and go do the spot. And like, you were nervous someone's going to come like take you out.
No, they were. Really everyone was informed. Everyone was informed that you're going to have your chance to go in there and fucking and
so
lay the law down and be like, yeah, come April, your ass is mine.
Yeah. I never get nervous for anything, but like,
you were nervous.
I was nervous for
you
that.
Were,
I was like,
yeah.
Am I going to get, like, what am I supposed to do?
What?
But I'm like,
what if I got shot in the face?
But I was like, fuck, I said I was going to do it. So I'm jumping in a fucking cage. Fuck it. I might get arrested, but it'd be good TV. But
that'd be, well, we'd have made sure your bail was covered. Like, we'll take it either way, right? I mean, that's the thing about pro wrestling, right? It's like Takeyama explained it to me once. He says, good, bad. If the crowd likes it, it's good. And so it's like you just roll with it. If some shit happens, if you get hard weight or what, you just keep going. You don't turn out and be like, oops, wait, hold on, break the fourth wall. It's like, nah, you keep rolling with it. You know, and in fact, like if a person gets injured in a match or whatever, it's a combat sport.
Yeah,
so play. Yeah. Okay. Well, oh, that was a fucked up finish. No, it wasn't. It is a finish.
Yeah.
And this guy was supposed to. Who cares? Run with it. Use it. I mean, this is. Having the fact, I mean, with Bloodsport, you can't pick how anything's going to happen. And that's on purpose, because if everybody's waiting around watching a 20-minute match and is too busy jerking off and drinking their beers and yelling goofball comments until 1449, where all of a sudden it's like, oh, now they're hitting their signature moves. Yeah. It means they're going to go
home. The crowds are so trained.
And now they pay attention for 4 minutes and 1 second.
Yeah.
Waiting for, oh, well, the match doesn't end until the finisher's been hit. Oh, he kicked out of the finish. Oh, that just means he has to do it again.
Yeah.
It's like, no. Yeah. No.
It's so formulaic, the whole
thing.
That's
one thing I really loved about Bloodsport was that some of the matches lasted 25 minutes. Some of them lasted like 2 minutes.
Uh-huh.
Finish can come anywhere, and the finish could be anything.
Yes.
There's no formula to anything.
I hope I see one of those back kicks.
That drove me, would drive me nuts in WWE is like, just the formula, and the crowd understands the formula.
Well, the crowd dictates the matches. They dictate actually.
They know that
the
good guy will do good, and then he'll get shut down, and then he'll make a comeback. Mm-hmm. And they don't really buy into anything, no matter how much noise they're making. They know it's not going to be the finish until it's like down to the finish with the finish. And
yeah, they just want to see cool moves almost. And it's not exactly their fault. I don't blame. I mean, it's like the WWE realizes, and a lot of wrestling will realize, like, well, you know, it's easy to market finishing moves. It's easier to keep the structure this way. It's easier to have the gimmicks and the written promos and to control the product in such a way that you can have more predictability, which is why with Bloodsport, the only predictability is that it's going to be hard hitting. It's going to be snug. It's going to be stiff and serious. One of my things about this is it's not about trying to be like, my wrestling's better than every other wrestling. That's no. I want what we do to draw the fans in and remove all that expectation stuff, all the predictability. I want people to have to really pay attention. Mm-hmm. I don't care if they're popping during the match. If they're so glued to watching that they're hardly making a noise, totally works, because I want what they see to mean something to them. I want it to matter. I want them to be drawn into it. You know, that's the whole point. I don't want people to be able to turn their eyes away. I want them to stay glued on the screen, glued in their seats, and really giving a shit about what these guys are doing.
Yeah, that's what's great about crowds in Japan. Clean break on the ropes or something. Oh,
yeah.
And then back to silence. I love that shit.
Or you hit a reversal and all of a sudden you're on top. They're like, oh, you know? It matters, you know?
When I went to Japan with him when he did Wrestle Kingdom, I totally changed my perception on watching professional wrestling. Mm-hmm. And that, and like, just the pageantry even of how everyone comes out and they're like great robes and the masks and the way the crowd was, it like pumped me up. I know how excited he was to go work in Japan and then getting to actually witness it firsthand and see how they reacted to him and how the fans were.
Well, I love how people have been going on about like, oh, well, but he's this champ and that, how can he, what is he doing this for? Why is, and you know why? Because John wants to fight.
Yeah.
John wants to get in the ring and
wants to work.
And you know what a champion does is they take on challengers no matter what. And it's like, it's not about their belts. It's about their attitude. It's about the intent. And so get in there, find the baddest dude and go, let's see who's got it tonight.
I just like to wrestle.
Yeah.
Every match you have is like a painting that you painted that you have that you can show people or whatever and experience. You only have so much time on the earth. I don't really give a shit about being famous. I actually kind of...
You're a bad famous person.
Not really my thing.
He's bad at it.
Like, having money is nice. It's a tool to provide for your family and stuff. But, you know, that's not things of chasing. Much like you going to fucking bare knuckle fight in Poland because you want to.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure you don't need that payday. You're doing it literally just because you want to do it.
Yeah, money's a great tool. But, you know, unless I'm using it to do something, money doesn't create meaning. Money in and of itself doesn't have any intrinsic value beyond what's on the paper. And even then, you know, you can get in an argument about, you know, depreciation and interest rates and modern monetary theory and things like this. But essentially, you can't find the meaningful element within the dollar bill. You only find the meaningful element in what you're doing in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe that is something that gives you money. Maybe it's something that costs you money. But having a meaningful life and having a meaningful purpose and fulfillment, that will leave you at the end of the day able to be the kind of person that looks at themselves in the mirror and is like, yeah, I'm living my life.
Have that satisfaction.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. Best of luck to you tonight. Best of luck to you tonight. And best of luck in Poland. I really appreciate you being literally my very first guest on this show.
My pleasure.
Starting.
My pleasure.
Big thank you to Josh for hanging out with me again. Really cool to just hear this episode again and just see the leaps and bounds of where this show has gone in its 1 year of life. I love you, Oral Sessions. And thank you guys again for listening. I super appreciate it. If you guys want to go on and check out some of these interviews on the YouTube, you can see what you're listening to. Just search Renee Paquette. Give it a spin up. Like it. Subscribe. All those fun things. Until next time, this has been Oral Sessions.